I stopped.
The hour of 10:15 having arrived, we'll call the House Tax Committee to order. We do have a quorum. Okay, we have a, let's see, we should have some minutes here. Representative Gomez moves the minutes of March 26, 2025. Any discussion, additions, or corrections? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Chair Gomez. Okay, let's get right into the agenda. Of course, I'm going to switch it up a little. I could never write an agenda that I keep to. So we're looking at, we're going to go to the first bill, Kreisha, Chairman Kreisha, and then we'll go to the Franzen bill, which I will carry as Chair Franzen has another commitment. And then we'll just go down, then we'll go back up to McDonald's, Robbins 1127, Witte, David's. And you might want to get through some of these bills a little quicker because I've got Sweet Martha's cookies here. And for everybody on the committee and staff here, they are, I've had a couple. And they are, I just had to test them. Taste testing, they are delicious. They're amazing.
Chair, is there a milk bar?
Well, that's the problem. I was discussing with somebody here that how do you have the cookies without milk? Well, as my mother, God rest her soul, taught me, Gregory, sometimes you just have to live disappointment. So I wasn't thinking. I bought the cookies, but I didn't bring the milk, and I should have. I apologize for that to the committee. Okay. I will move House File 1833, a Kreisha bill. So members, if you could take that one. So far we are in order at this point. So let's just see what we have here. Okay, I will move House File 1833. Is there an amendment? Is there an amendment? No amendment, okay. Chair Kreisha, if you could please present your bill, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members. So a couple of things. I have notes from my L.A., who's very intelligent. And if you've ever seen the movie, so I have 2 points that I have to do to get out of the way. If you've ever seen the movie The Lincoln Lawyer, there's a line in there where the lawyer is shot, and one of his advisors said, well, you're nobody until you've been shot. But my L.A. has said you're nobody until you present to taxes. So, Mr. Chair, thank you for the bill hearing. And the second note that I have, just so you know, is it's written in handwritten, and it says, make sure the chair is funnier than you. So, Mr. Chair, I'm going to go right to the bill, which is House File 18.
Mr. Chair, I've always considered myself nobody because nobody's perfect. Okay, so please present your bill.
That was very funny, Mr. Chair. And so with that, Mr. Chair. Members, you have in front of you House File 1833, and this is a refundable sales and use tax exemption provided on construction materials. The city of Aiken, and working with the school district, is trying to work on a building project. And so with that, I have Superintendent Mr. Stifter and the board chair, and I'd like them to present for the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Kreisha. Please state your name and who represent for the record, please, yes, sir.
Good morning. My name is Dan Stifter. I'm the superintendent of Aiken Public School District, ISD number one. I appreciate the opportunity to present this morning. Our district is committed to providing high-quality education that prepares our students for success, but we are facing some real challenges when it comes to the condition and the capacity of our school buildings. Our facilities are aging, space is limited, and they no longer meet the needs of our students, staff, and our community. Since 2022, we've been engaged in thorough community-driven facilities planning processes. We've hosted listening sessions throughout our community. We've conducted surveys. We've evaluated our enrollment projections, and we assessed our building conditions. The results are clear. Our classrooms are undersized. Our roofs are failing. Our HVAC systems are outdated, and we lack the adequate gym, athletic, and community spaces our community wants. We've also heard loud and clear that safety and security and educational adequacy are top concerns in our community. We've taken meaningful steps by purchasing land for future development and developing long-term plan to bring all of our facilities pre-K-12 onto one campus. But construction costs continue to rise and every dollar counts. That's why House File 1833 or 1833 is so important to us. By providing a refundable sales and use tax exemption on construction materials, this bill would allow us to use those funds and those local dollars to further our project. Instead of sending funds to the state in the form of sales tax, we can reinvest that money directly into our students, into safer buildings, better classrooms, more functional learning environments, and to our community in general. This exemption would not only reduce the financial burden on our local taxpayers, it would help us build smarter and more affordably as we bring our facilities plan to the voters, hopefully by the end of 2025. I ask you for your support on House File 1833.
Thank you very much, Superintendent. What's the total cost of the project, or do we know that yet, or?
Yeah, on a pre-K-12 within some infrastructure, it's about $58
million. Okay, very good. Aiken, I've got a very special place in my heart for the city of Aiken. I had an Aunt Ann there, and she was, like, really old when I was a kid. And in 1963, my mother and father adopted a brother and sister from Korea, from Seoul, South Korea. And she was always so concerned that my brother would never own land that she gave him a cemetery plot in Aiken. So he was a landowner. So he owned part of the United States and is a cemetery plot. Isn't it home of the mighty gobblers?
It is home of the gobblers, yes.
Gobblers. Love the gobblers. Chair Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Kusha. Thank you for bringing this forward. It sounds like a very large project, but as we start thinking about carving out different municipalities and different projects from sales tax exemption, I hope we'll seriously consider giving the same treatment to our schools as we did to our public safety centers, because our districts are really, it takes a lot to get a referendum passed and could use all the help it could get. So thank you.
Thank you, Chair Joachim. Any questions at this point for the superintendent? Okay, before we go further, is there anyone else in the audience who wish to testify for the bill or with concerns? Does the department? Nothing from the department right now? Okay. So you've got another testifier there, or is she a resource person?
Did you want to talk?
My name is Cindy Hills. I am the chair of the school board, and I will stand on Mr. Stifter's comments. Thank you for your work, and thank you for your support and your consideration.
Okay. Isn't Aiken like 2,300 people, the city itself?
Oh.
Or am I off?
Yeah, it's probably about 1,500, 1,800.
Oh, wow. That was way off. Okay. Okay, so questions for the superintendent, the school board chair?
Yes.
Or Chair Kresha on this bill from members? Okay, with that, Chair Gomez? You want to wrap it up there, Chair Kresha?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members, for your consideration of this bill. Thank you, Chair Joachim, who's my co-chair in the Education Finance. Anytime that, we have the limited resources in Education Committee, and anytime that we can help our schools with their facilities and other resources, it means that's very important. So that's this one. And I would just put this in front of you, Mr. Chair, members. With being the home of the mighty gobblers, please help me here so I don't have to go beg for avian flu money that would help.
They, Chair Kresha, they survived the flu. They did. And I think there's a cheer that the cheerleaders at Aiken can always use. We're number one.
We are.
Our superintendent?
Our school district number is ISD number one. So.
See, there you go. There you go.
Look it up.
We're number one. Yeah. Okay, thank you very much. Anything else to wrap up, Chair?
Just thank you for your consideration, and I know you have a busy agenda, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Kresha, Superintendent, School Board Chair.
Yes, thank
okay.
you.
Okay, thanks for being here today. Appreciate it.
Thank you for
with
time.
That, I will move that House File 1833 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. And Chair Gomez and I have been going over some numbers, and we'll continue to, because that's what we do. And after yesterday's meeting, going over some numbers, I just wanted to bring this. You might need these while we can still afford them. So, okay, let's go to item next, House File 1974, a Franzen bill. So I will move the bill. I don't think there's any of. Whoops. Okay, let's get that in order. Okay, I will move House File 1974. I do not see any amendments. So we have the bill before us, and we have a witness here. And just some brief comments that I'd like to make on behalf of Chair Franzen. This is something that we've done in the past in different areas, not necessarily this area. But what this bill would do, it has to do with basically forgiving some student loans for people that go to critical access dental clinics, whether it's Preston, Minnesota, well, we don't have one actually, but Minneapolis or wherever it might be. So I'm going to turn this over to Jeremy Esteson. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Jeremy Esteson, Taft Advisors. I represent a number of critical access dental clinics throughout greater Minnesota. I'm here today not only because the chairs have graciously decided to hear the bill, but I understand there's something about cookies. So I'll be sticking around.
That has nothing to do with this bill.
Oh, well, tooth decay, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Esteson.
So unfortunately, my client was unable to join me today, and we were in the Senate Tax Committee the other day where he gave compelling and dynamic testimony, so I'm going to do my best to convey the numbers. The biggest challenge in greater Minnesota, and not just greater Minnesota, let me back up, but across Minnesota is access for dental clinics. The objective here is to deal with medical issues while they are still treatable in the dental clinic. Because what happens, and there's evidence, is that folks who lack access end up in the emergency room being treated in ways that are potentially not consistent with preventative things or simpler treatments that end up costing 3x at minimum for ultimate resolution. And so Caring Hands Dental Clinic, for instance, in Alexandria, based in Alexandria, serves both Alexandria and the Pipestone community. Last year, they saw patients from 591 zip codes, which I think is a testament to access, and a little bit more by the numbers. In Minnesota in 2018, there were 4,140 dentists. 2022, 3,489 dentists.
Mr. Esteson, can you say that again?
Yeah. According to the department, in 2018, there were 4,140 dentists in the state of Minnesota. In 2022, 3,489.
Okay, thank you.
Building on that, on average, 162 providers leave the system for whatever reason, and the U of M is only graduating 100. Not saying that's the only place that the dental talent in the state comes from, but it's yet another important number. As it relates to access, in urban areas in Minnesota, there's one dentist per 1,600 people. Regional centers, you've got one dentist roughly for each 2,150. And in rural areas, there is one dentist for every 2,200 people. And in areas like Pipestone, there is one dentist for nearly every 4,000 people. This bill is focused on trying to recruit and retain talent. And critical access dental clinics have figured out how to pay their talent, but what they don't offer vis-a-vis their competitors in South Dakota and Iowa and North Dakota is a way to offset some of the debt that potentially young or mid-career dentist or technician is bringing with them as they come to the clinic. This bill would allow for $5,250 worth of dental expense paid for by the clinic to not impact the income tax due by that dentist or clinician each year. The clinics feel as though they've got that to offer. They'd like to do it without any state help. And Mr. Chair, if it hasn't been mentioned already, I'd like to note that the fiscal note indicates that there is a negligible impact.
Okay, very important with what we're looking at here. Okay, was there anyone in the audience who testified for the bill or with concerns? Now, Mr. Esteson, the reason I didn't offer the cookies at this point is because I thought it would be highly inappropriate to offer chocolate chip cookies when we're on a dental bill. That's why I'm the co-chair. Okay.
We're working on increasing access, Mr. Chair.
Okay, and that's a good thing. Any questions for the witness on House File 1974? Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Davids. I'm just curious, how did you come up with the number of $5,200?
Mr. Esteson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Harder, that was done in consultation with some fiscal staff and based on a relatively informal survey of what the clinics think they can afford to make it. Our objective here is to focus this only on critical access clinics. This would not be available to your typical non-critical access clinic, And it needed to be inside of the bubble of what they could afford to pay for to make sure that all the clinics could take advantage of it.
Representative Harder?
That's all. Thank you.
Any other questions for members? We'll go to, you want to wrap up? Or? Okay, Chair Gomez.
Yeah, I don't think it matters. I guess I'm on that last point, on Representative Harder's point. I wonder if we, if somebody, maybe Mr. Williams can sort of explain the kind of like federal policy that this is interacting with. And I'm curious about, because my understanding is that this is connected to that federal exclusion, I think. Is that what it is? That it was part of the TCJA, and so, no? Or it was an expansion? I'm just wondering if the federal thing expires and we have this in place, will there be a cost to this potentially down the road, I guess, is my main
question. Mr. Williams, what am I doing with my bill that's not actually mine?
Chair Davids and Representative Gomez, all the interactions here are a little complicated, so I'll sort of go slow. There's a...
Thank you. That hurt. Mr. Williams, I was at the top of my class, but sorry. It was a very small class. Class. Yeah. Mr. Williams.
So federal law includes an exclusion from gross income for $5,000. And the summary says $5,200 is actually $5,250 of educational assistance payments. This can be a situation where an employer pays for education on behalf of their employees. And in the CARES Act, there was a one-year the student loans were added to that one-year, to that exclusion, and sort of were or payments on employees' student loans were added to the definition of educational assistance payments. That CARES Act provision was extended, and it's currently scheduled under federal law to expire on December 31st, 2025, so at the end of the tax year, sort of with the other TCJA provisions. The bill would allow a subtraction for amounts above that $5,250. So under current law, if one of these critical access dental facilities paid more than $5,250 on their employee student loans, the amount above $5,250 would be taxable federally. And it's for state purposes. As the bill is drafted, it just applies to the amounts above $5,250. So if the federal provision were to expire, I think actually, you know, it's probably more consistent with the intent of the bill to cover any amounts that are taxable. So, you know, if the bill moves forward in the process, it might make sense to do an amendment there. But I think that if the federal provision expires, this bill would continue to apply just to the amounts above $5,250. This is also one of those provisions that at the federal level has sort of been extended a couple times, so it may be extended as well as Congress considers sort of the expiration of TCJA.
Chair Gomez.
Yeah, thank you for that. That was very helpful. I guess I would have expected to see a cost with this. Is there, maybe I'm not, maybe I'm misunderstanding something.
Ms. Templin?
Mr. Chair and Representative Gomez, the estimate does have a cost. There is a negligible cost, and negligible is under $5,000 or less. So they are expecting the revenue loss to be, you know, obviously negligible, and so the amount is reflected as such. I don't have a specific number. The revenue estimate doesn't provide detail about a projected number of loans that could be affected or that could benefit from this proposal. But I can look into that if you'd like.
Thank you. Chair Gomez?
So, yeah, I think I didn't read the backside of the revenue estimate. But basically, like, the negligible cost is not because there isn't a cost to it, but just kind of like because there aren't going to be a ton of taxpayers impacted by this change. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you, Chair Gomez. Okay, let's go to Representative Hewitt.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, and I definitely didn't want to speak after the co-chair. Maybe staff can answer this because I'm trying to look through my briefs and stuff like that. Is this program already being used by critical access hospitals or clinics that family practice or primary care physicians use?
Mr. Williams.
Chair Davids and Representative Hewitt, I'm not quite sure I have any information about whether or not it's being used, but sort of my understanding from the testifiers is that there are some, potentially some dental clinics that want to provide the student loan assistance that are not able, that are giving amounts above $5,250, so that's sort of the reason for the bill, but maybe the testifiers
Mr. Estenson?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hewitt, a couple points. First, there is loan forgiveness programs that the state and the federal government provide for practitioners who choose to enter the critical access space. We have found ourselves unable to take advantage of those programs for a variety of reasons that I'd be happy to discuss with you offline. And for that reason, we're here asking for this kind of unique thing, at least from our perspective. It may exist in other areas, but we didn't base it on that. And Mr. Chair, if I may, to Chair Gomez's question, we are actively engaged with Senator Klobuchar and Representative Stauber, both of whom feel strongly about the continuing existence of the federal program, but also potentially increasing the limits.
Okay. Representative Hewitt?
Just real quick close on. So the testifier did a great job at saying what happens with patients with dental issues that do not get treatment. And rural Minnesota is a big part of that. Working in an ER myself, many people come in, and he's exactly right. We treat them with painkillers, which is also a no-no in many cases, and then they end up going to their dentist maybe the next day or whenever they can get in. So the more practitioners in all of our professions, from vets to dentistry to primary care, we need them in our rural areas. I think it's a great bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. Representative Swazenski.
Thank you. This mic is tough, but a quick question maybe to Sean Williams. How does that work? So, you know, the primary driver of this would be a dental practitioner that would be working for a group. How does that work if, you know, oftentimes these rural dental is just a one-person shop? How would that possibly interact? Is that just depending on what their tax status is, or could they potentially, you know, treat themselves as the employee as they're running this through?
Mr. Williams?
Chair Davids and Representative Swazenski, to be covered by this existing federal exemption and then also by the bill, the benefits would have to be offered as part of an educational assistance plan, where sort of the employer offers on behalf of their employees a written plan for getting these educational assistance benefits. I'm not quite sure how that would apply to a situation with like a sole proprietor, single person who doesn't have any employees. So I'd have to get back to you on that detail.
Mr. Estenson, to that point.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Swazenski, our objective here was to make this program applicable to payments received from a critical access dental clinic as established by statute, and there are a couple of criteria there. The most important one is treating at least 85% MA patients to someone who chooses to practice for that clinic. And I believe there are further stipulations, but we tried to make it tight so that there wouldn't be folks trying to take advantage of a situation where they might somehow self-define as a critical access clinic.
The gentleman from Lyon? Okay, any other questions? Mr. Estenson, if you'd like to wrap up my bill.
Mr. Chair, as always, you've got a great bill. Thank you.
Fine piece of legislation. I'll renew my motion that House File 1974 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, members. Thank you, Mr. Estenson. And you can stick around for cookies, although I don't think they'll probably make it past this table, would be my guess. Okay. Let's go to House File 1127. And members, if you have bills up this time of year, if you have bills up in other committees, let us know. We want to try and make this work for everybody best we can. Representative Robbins, welcome to your committee. If you could, Representative Robbins moves House File 1127. I don't see any amendments. So if you could please present your bill, Chair Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Madam Chair and members. This bill would give a construction material sales tax exemption for the city of Maple Grove. We are currently underway on updating our community center, which is a huge regional asset. And so I have with me the mayor of Maple Grove, Mark Stephenson, and our city administrator, Heidi Nelson. So I'd like to invite them to also say a few words.
Okay, Your Honor, if you could please introduce yourself for the committee and who you represent. Good morning, Chair Davids and members of the committee. My name is Mark Stephenson, and I am the mayor of Maple Grove. I'm here on the city's behalf today, and I want to extend my appreciation to you and the members of the committee for hearing House File 1127 today. And I want to also express my appreciation for Representative Robbins for carrying this bill on behalf of our city. The city of Maple Grove is embarking on a renovation and expansion project for its community center, which opened in 1997. The center has served the public well for over 30 years, and we're hosting usually over 650,000 visitors annually. The facility is in need of investment, reinvestment, which will occur over the next 3 years. The city is requesting a sales tax exemption for this public facility project that serves as an asset to the Northwest Metro region. And I thank you for your consideration of our request, and I can stand for any questions that the committee may have.
Thank you, Your Honor. Let's go to the other testifier here. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Good morning, Chair Davids and members of the committee. My name is Heidi Nelson. I serve as the city administrator for the city of Maple Grove, and I'm just here to provide any answers to questions regarding the project.
Thank you so much. Is there anyone in the audience which has 5 for this bill, House File 1127, or with concerns? Member questions? Representative Hewitt.
Just a refresher, Mr. Chair. Representative Robbins, was this ever bonded? I know it was on the list a couple times.
Chair Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Hewitt. Yes, they did receive some bonding money in the 2023 bonding bill, but not the full request, and we have another bonding request this session. If you were on the bonding tour, you saw the leaking area under the swimming pool. So there is real need to fix this.
Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Representative Robbins. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Does the department have any questions or concerns? She says, what are you talking about? Whose wine? What wine? Whatever. Chair Gomez, before we wrap it up. Okay. Now, the problem with this bill is none of the money goes to the Leafs, does it? This is all city stuff.
This is all city stuff, you know. Okay. But the reality is, Chair, is that you need to fear the Leaf.
I do fear the Leaf.
Okay.
Yes. I have nightmares about it. If you'd like to wrap it up, Chair Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. As with many communities around the state, getting relief on these construction sales tax exemptions is really important to city budgets to keep these projects rolling. The Maple Grove Community Center really is a regional asset. We get visitors from all across the Northwest Metro, and everyone really values this in our communities. Thank you.
Thank you. And Representative Robbins renews her motion. That House File 1127 be later for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Let's go now to Chair McDonald, House File 148. So, members, if you'd pull 148 out of your packets. So, Chair McDonald, I will move that House File 148 be later for possible inclusion. Oh, you got a good author there, too. Doesn't just say other. Okay. With that being said, I've moved the bill to your bill, Chair McDonald.
Chair Davids, Chair Gomez, thank you so much to have me in front of your committee. This was my favorite committee that I was on 6 years of my 15 years here, so it's a pleasure to be back to the Tax Committee. I truly miss it. And to quote a great line from a movie, if you build it, they will come. Field of Dreams, just in case you didn't know. So my bill is to construct Delano Ice Rink, and it's to a refundable sales tax exemption for construction materials. I'm sure you've heard many of those bills here. Today, Mr. Chair, I have a good friend, and one of my first votes that I made when I was elected in 1999 to the City Council of Delano was to vote for new city administrator, Mr. Phil Kern. It was still today the best vote I've made in my political career. And with that, Mr. Chair, I turn it over to my testifier, our city administrator, Mr. Phil Kern.
Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. As Representative McDonald said, my name is Phil Kern. I'm not sure I feel the pressure to live up to that statement he just made, but thank you, Representative McDonald. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, as Representative McDonald stated, we are proceeding with a Project Spirit Park, which is a multi-use, multi-seasonal facility. The primary feature of that park is a covered, chilled sheet of ice that will support both hockey and multi-season programs in our community and for our region. We proceeded with this project under a design-build approach, and as a result, we weren't able to separate contracts for labor and construction materials. Therefore, we are requesting an exemption and rebate of sales tax for those construction materials and equipment. We estimate that amount to be around $4.5 million. Again, thank you for the opportunity to present this to you today, and would stand for any questions you may have.
Thank you, sir. And to members, I apologize. The revenue note was not in your packet. I'd like you to, maybe Ms. Templin could go over that for the committee before we lay this bill over. And then you will receive it. You will be getting it from us soon.
Yes, Mr. Chair. The fiscal impact projected by the Minnesota Department of Revenue for the city sales tax exemption has a total general fund estimated revenue reduction in fiscal 26 of $290,000 and a revenue reduction to the legacy funds of $20,000 for a total estimated revenue reduction to all funds of $310,000 in fiscal 26. There are no costs for this proposal projected in fiscal 27 through fiscal 29.
Okay. Any questions of Ms. Templin on the revenue impact? Okay, anyone in the audience like to testify on behalf of the bill or with concerns? Would the department like to weigh in? Okay, thank you, Ms. Barris. Not thank you that you're not weighing in, but thank you. We'd love it if you would weigh in once in a while here, but we'll get to that. So, no, I should just move on here. Not doing
please,
well.
Please
not
do
doing
it.
Anybody any favors. Okay, any questions, more questions, any questions from members? Chair McDonald, you want to wrap it up?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, with that information, I might need a Kleenex, if you could pass one around. No, thank you very much. I think what makes this project unique, and maybe not, but it is unique to us, is that half of the project is also being fundraised by the Delano Area Hockey Association, a nonprofit group. So it's a shared venture between the city and the nonprofit group, Delano Area Hockey Association, who's worked very hard in raising a lot of funds for this project. So I appreciate your consideration. I know it's going to be a tough assignment. Thank you, Representative Swazinski, but a tough project, and I appreciate Chair Gomez, Aisha Gomez, and Chair Greg Davis for the opportunity to present this.
And before we go on, I never went to Chair Gomez for comments. Okay. Okay, so that being said, are the Tigers involved in this at all?
You know, Mr. Chair, I said to Phil Kern, I said, I bet he's going to remember that the Delano Tigers is our mascot. Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Delano Tigers. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Very good.
With that, I will renew my motion that House File 148 be later for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, sir, and thank you, Chair McDonald.
Thank you very much,
Item
members.
Next, we will go to House File 1227. For 1227, okay. So, Representative Witte moves House File 1227. This will be laid over for possible inclusion, if everything goes well for you. Representative Witte moves H1227A1 amendment. Could you just briefly explain what you're doing there?
On the amendment, yes, there was an adjustment to, it was caught yesterday over on the Senate side, so it's just adjusting the sales tax cost or what's going to be granted in it.
Oh, I see. Okay, members, this just means that it's just for Lakeville, it's not statewide. Okay, any further discussion on the A1 amendment? Representative Witte renews his motion that the H1227A1 amendment be added to the bill. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say no. Motion prevails. Two-year bill as amended, Representative.
Thank you, Chair Davids. Thank you, Chair Gomez and fellow committee members. This is another bill for refundable sales and tax exemption for construction materials for a public safety training facility in Lakeville. This will be providing valuable training and cross-training for our first responders. That is important as they keep our communities safe. and I'm going to turn it over to my testifier, City Council Member Dan Walter.
Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Dan Walter. I serve on the Lakeville City Council.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a pleasure for me to testify in support of Representative Witte's House File 1227, which provides a sales and use tax exemption for construction materials for Lakeville's new First Responder Skills Training Center, or the FIRST Center. The FIRST Center will provide state-of-the-art training for law enforcement and first responders, including an immersive reality-based training enhanced by the latest in AV technology, a two-story training space with flexible wall systems to simulate various commercial and residential environments, a dedicated MATS room for training in defensive tactics, response to resistance and de-escalation, a tactical target range designed for advanced training, and a standard target range that will also be open to the public. This will be a regional asset, not only serving Lakeville, but neighboring communities, counties, and state agencies as well. We've had discussions with Dakota County Technical College and Inver Hills Community College to incorporate the facility into their educational programming. And we're also confident this will be an asset to state agencies such as the DNR and Department of Corrections. It will be the only facility of its kind in the South Metro, with the closest comparable facilities being in Cottage Grove and Maple Grove. This project has received both state and federal financial support, with the City of Lakeville picking up almost $18 million. For Lakeville and our neighbors in the South Metro area, this kind of training facility is an important recruitment and retention asset. It is also critically needed to ensure our first responders have the best training possible for their own safety and ours alike. Thank you again to Representative Witte for carrying this legislation and to the committee for hearing this bill.
Thank you, sir. Anyone in the audience wish to testify on behalf of the bill or with concerns? Does the department wish to make comment? No. So, with that being said, questions for the author or the testifier from members of the committee? Chair Gomez?
I just actually have a question for Ms. Templin as I'm looking at these revenue estimates. Some of them, so they all have a general fund cost, they all have a natural resources and arts fund cost, but then some of them have housing assistance fund and special revenue fund on them and some don't. Can you just explain why?
Ms. Templin?
Mr. Chair and Chair Gomez. Yes, that is the Department of Revenue has started after the February forecast in updated estimates. They started adding the fiscal impact to the housing assistance fund and the special revenue fund. And that is because the metropolitan county sales taxes, the 0.75 and the 0.25%. Those funds are distributed to state or deposited to state funds as well. And so if there is a reduction in sales tax, there is a fiscal impact to the general fund, to the legacy fund, as well as to these additional funds that were added. And they have begun showing the fiscal impact starting after February.
Chair Gomez.
Thank you. So, okay, so is the special revenue fund the quarter cent sales tax for transportation then?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gomez, that is correct. The special revenue fund is the transportation.
Okay, thank you. And so,
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it's like if it's in the seven county metro, then it'll have those four items, but then if it's not, then it just has the general fund and the natural resource and arts fund?
Ms. Templin?
Mr. Chair and Representative Gomez, I think I'm following your question, but yes, it is.
Yeah.
In this bill specifically, there would be a $10,000 reduction to the housing assistance fund with the proposal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But then, the Aiken one doesn't have those two other ones because it's not in the metro area where the three-quarter cent sales tax for housing and the quarter cent sales tax for transportation is being levied.
Ms. Templin?
Oh, I see your question.
Yes. Yeah,
I think, Madam Chair, that the department, I'm not sure on this, they had discussed including this analysis on some proposals and not on others. And I think it may be a function of some proposals have been updated after the February forecast and some haven't. And so that's why you may not be seeing the fiscal impact for all the proposals. But I do see your point that you know, if a proposal doesn't affect the county metropolitan sales tax, you know, should there not be a fiscal impact reflected? Okay. And I will confirm that. Thanks.
Chair Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks, Ms.
Okay. So with that, any questions for Representative Witte or for the testifier? Would you like to wrap it up, Representative Witte?
Thank you, Chair Davids. Once again, I appreciate your time, your support. This is not only a Lakeville asset, but this will be a regional, state, federal facility for the South Metro area. This will help with recruitment and retention as we have a difficult times recruiting officers for our state. Thank you.
Representative Witte, are you a Cougar or a Panther?
I'm a Panther.
You're a Panther, all right. Okay, so Representative Witte renews his motion at House File 1227 as amended to be later for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative Witte, and thank you to your testifier. Appreciate it. And, of course, I can't go in order. I'm just going to mix it up a little bit more. We have Representative Abadji here. Let's go to your bill. And the members of the tax committee, they're going to be here anyways, I hope. So, Representative, let's see here. Representative Gomez moves House File 1106. Please, are there any amendments?
Yeah, there should be one, Mr. Chair.
Okay, let me dig that out. Okay, Chair Gomez moves the H1106A1 amendment. Any discussion to that, or just to get in the
shape
that the author would like? All in favor say aye. 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 Opposed? Motion barely prevails. It is a matter. It kind of scared me on that one. I kind of had to come to the rescue. Okay, the bill as amended, Chair Gbadji.
Thank you, Chair Davids. Thank you, Chair Gomez. Thank you, committee members. It is a pleasure to be back in front of the tax committee. I definitely miss my time here. I'm presenting House File 1106 as amended. This bill seeks to update some of the logistics related to the Tax Expenditure Review Commission, fondly known as the TERC. So in the amendment, what I did is I removed the repealer that was in the original bill language and instead outlined a method for collecting the objective statements of the different tax expenditures that would be passed in a certain year and enacted into law. And so what it does is it has both chairs of the House and Tax Senate committees draft a memo to the TERC with the objective statements of the tax expenditures that pass in that year. And this is important because part of the function of the commission, which began in 2021, is that during those meetings, the members of the TERC discuss the different tax expenditures, and a major point of that conversation is the objective of the expenditure. It guides the discussion to develop how the expenditure should be officially reviewed, as well as understanding if the expenditure is continuing to meet its objective. So after we've clarified that part, the bill then goes on to greater clarify that the Commissioner of Revenue can designate another person outside of themselves or their designee to represent the department at a meeting of the TERC. The rest of the bill outlines that the TERC report will now be due in February rather than December to allow for the appropriate time to complete the report and also have it released when it can be more readily used by the legislature. The bill also requires that the commissioner to call the first meeting so that the committee can begin its work without delay from either chamber of the legislature. So with these changes to the commission, it should have greater ability to run more efficiently and complete its task of reviewing the various tax expenditures that are still on books and provide information to the legislature about how to handle them. And then I'm happy to stand for any questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. This is a very important bill. Chair Gomez and I have served on this, and Chair Gbadji has. Who's chair of it now? Am I the new chair?
I don't know. We haven't met with the new group yet, but we do have members from both the Senate and the House that have been appointed. So I think if this passes, then the Commissioner of Revenue. Otherwise, one of us will have to decide to call the first meeting, and then we'll select a new chair then, probably It would probably be someone from the House, so it might actually be you, Mr. Chair.
Oh, wow. I'm going to vote for Chair Gomez. But, no, this is, members, this Chair Gomez.
I appreciate your support, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Anytime, anytime. So, no, this, I don't know how many people are really cognizant of what this group does, but it's the Tax Expenditure Review Commission, and I think it does some very, very important work. Anyone from the audience wish to testify for the bill or with concerns? Does the department wish to weigh in? Okay. Any questions for members for Chair Agbaje? Chair Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you so much, Representative Agbaje, and for your service on TURC. We really appreciate it. I know it's like it takes a lot of time and energy, especially in this time where we're kind of there's a lot of work to do on the TURC before we get to the point where we're like actually doing the evaluations and figuring out do the tax expenditures do what they say they're going to do. And so I know that's a lot that you're going through, and we appreciate it. So I'm just looking at the amendment, and so it changes the part of statute that requires tax expenditures to include statements of intent, and instead has the chairs of the. This basically gives us some work. So I'm just curious, you know, it has the chairs of the tax and Senate committee committees submit to the TURC objective statements for tax expenditures implemented during the time that they were chairs. And so, I guess I'm just, I wonder if you can, I'm trying to kind of think through how this would go logistically and you know, I think it does make sense for people who bring forward tax expenditures for the individual, like, you know, House or Senate authors to be really clear about what their intent is so that we can properly evaluate the effectiveness of the expenditure. And so I guess maybe it would be like if you're the chair, then you're sort of consulting with your members as you're implementing these things. And then after session, after a tax bill is enacted, then you kind of submit that to the TURC. But can you just talk a little bit more about the thinking? I mean, I know that this is a negotiation between the House and the Senate, but I wonder if you could just, tell me a little bit about that sort of like how that would work.
Yes.
To the author of the bill.
Yes. Thank you, Chair Gomez and Chair Davids. The idea behind this, as you mentioned, it is kind of negotiated language over various discussions between the House and Senate about how this should work. The idea is really to kind of keep some of these statements outside of the legislation so as not to make the legislation more unnecessarily longer. So I think the idea would be that when someone is presenting a tax expenditure in committee, that they would clearly state what the purpose of the expenditure is. Hopefully that can be collected, you know, in the notes or in the minutes somehow. And then I think also while both the Senate chair and the House chair are also deciding on which expenditures they plan to include in their final tax bill, they would also, in the process of that conference committee or negotiations, they also would then delineate what the objective statements of each of those expenditures were. So in that way it could be easily collected, turned into a short memo to then send to the TURC so they would have that ready for their meetings.
Chair Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Agbaje. I guess I can understand the some of the objections to maybe like adding objective statements to statute. I do wonder it seems like having a sort of more formal like adding them to session law or having the it seems a little bit like a game of telephone. It's like, I guess for me personally, I would rather have the author of an expenditure kind of put down in writing what it is that the intention is with the expenditure, that be, you know, put into session law. So at least it's like kind of written down somewhere that's semi-formal rather than this memo process. But I appreciate all your work on this. And, you know, I know we'll be continuing to work on this as we move forward. So thank you.
Yes, sure.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. To the author, who are the members of this committee right now?
Oh,
do you have a list?
I don't know if I can remember everyone off the top of my head, but myself, you, Chair Davids, I think Representative Joy, Representative Elkins, Senator.
What is?
Oh, Oh, the new members. I actually don't know all the new members. I'm sorry. So, yeah, myself and Representative Smith, and then I believe yourself, Representative Chair Davids, maybe.
I think so.
And then I'm not sure who the new Republican members are from the House, but.
Representative Joyce St. Robbins, maybe?
It's not me. It's not me.
No, Representative Robbins.
Is it Robbins?
Robbins? Okay. Okay.
Well, I'll check that out later.
Yeah.
I'll check that off.
I know we got our notifications in our email, but I don't know if I've seen the official list yet, so I don't. And I also don't know who on the Senate side either, but.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. Any more questions for the author? Chair Gomez? We'll have the author then please wrap the bill up.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, committee. I appreciate being back here, and I look forward to support for the bill and hopefully in the larger tax bill this year. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. So I will renew my Chair Gomez renews her motion that House File 1106, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative. Okay, item next, which you've all been waiting for, is the Davids Bill, House File 1681, which I will move. Okay. There are no amendments. Okay, so I move House File 1681. It'll be to be laid over, Mr. Bagnoli. And if the testifiers could please come forward. I think I'm going to turn it right over to who'd like to go first, Mr. Bagnoli or Mr. Leach. Mr. Bagnoli, why don't you get us going?
Mr. Chair, this is on. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joe Bagnoli. I'm with Winthrop and Weinstein Law Firm, and I represent the Minnesota State Agricultural Society, which is the organization that puts on the Minnesota State Fair. We are here today with I'm here joined with Chris Leach, who's the Deputy General Manager of the State Fair. We are here today with a piece of legislation that does two things. It increases the borrowing limit of the State Fair from $20 million to $50 million. Mr. Leach is going to give you a little bit of reason why we're doing this, but increases the borrowing limit from $20 million to $50 million. It also allows us to retain the sales tax that we collect at the State Fair. And this is the sales tax on only State Agricultural Society products, or I guess things that they pay sales tax on right now. That would be parking admissions and tickets to events. That does not include cookies, ice cream, popcorn, or any other thing that you get from a vendor. The reason that we did this, I'll give you the little bit of the history of this, which is for as long as the fair, as far as we know, existed, the fair was given the ability to retain their sales tax. And they were given that ability because right now the fair is a self-sufficient organization, does not seek and never has sought any resources from the state of Minnesota. The sort of understanding, although it wasn't in statute, was that we could keep the sales tax and that sales tax would be used for capital improvements at the fair. In 2002 or 2003, when we had a recession, the state needed resources, and in addition to saying to the state fair, they also said to the county fairs, who also had the same ability to retain their sales tax, we need that money, so we're going to ask you to remit the dollars. Over the past couple of years, the county fairs have changed the law back to the way it was pre-2002 or 3. And they are retaining their sales tax for use on capital projects at county fairs. We're asking to do the same. So that's what the bill does. And with that, Mr. Leach, if you
please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Chair Davids, members of the committee. I'm Chris Leach, Deputy General Manager of the Minnesota State Fair. It's my pleasure to be able to speak with you today, so thank you for the opportunity. Since its founding in 1854, the Minnesota State Fair has celebrated the best of what our state has to offer. We now welcome over 2 million people each year to our fairgrounds. We consider ourselves a cultural and educational and economic cornerstone of the community here. Our primary sources of revenue are the items that are listed in this bill, which is gate admission tickets, parking. Oftentimes when we have large capital projects, we have to leverage debt in the form of our own revenue bonds. The fair itself spans 322 acres. It is a home to several iconic buildings. For those that haven't been there, if you think the agriculture or horticulture building, the 4-H building, grandstand, coliseum. In addition to these historic structures, the hundreds of trees, miles and miles of streets and sidewalks, electrical, plumbing infrastructure, all of which require continuous maintenance and improvement. The past 20 years, we've invested about $110 million in these improvements. We plan another $20 million this year alone, the bulk of which will go towards a much-needed renovation of the Lee and Rose Warner Coliseum. The rising costs of construction, labor, which I'm sure you've heard about extensively, makes this level of investment difficult to sustain. To ensure that we can continue to maintain the aging infrastructure, we've asked for these two items today. First, to increase that debt capacity from $30 million to $50 million, and then the sales tax exemption on the fair operations that Joe mentioned. The fair itself drives $300 million in economic impact annually. It is also the state's largest platform for education and agriculture. We support a crucial support for 4-H, FFA, other youth development programs. These funds would be dedicated for essential infrastructure investments, which would allow us to fuel this economic engine that is the Minnesota State Fair, to enhance our exhibition and competition spaces, educational programming, upgrade accessibility, and I think most importantly, just preserve this place, these grounds that have meant so much to so many people in our community for generations to come. With that, I thank you for your consideration, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I appreciate your time.
Well, thank you very much. Anyone in the audience wish to testify on behalf of the bill or with concerns? Does the department wish to weigh in? Okay. Okay, so questions for members. Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So one thing the bill does is give an exemption for admissions to the fair. Now, I know a couple months ago the Agricultural Society raised admission prices to $20 for anybody over 12. For a family with teenage kids, with a few teenage kids, that could kind of price people out of attending the fair at some point. I mean, if we're going to give this sales tax exemption, is there any chance that the admission prices could be lowered?
Mr. Leach?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative. I think that we put an awful lot of thought into what we charge for admission. We feel that we are competitive with other events in the state, with other outings for families. But I believe that it's possible that a sales tax exemption like this would allow us some breathing room moving forward on those considerations of the price of gate admission.
Representative Freiberg?
Yeah.
Representative Lee?
Thank you, Chair. I guess my question is about the impact of increasing the debt limit, and I guess maybe this is a better asked for nonpartisan and or maybe even the bonding staff. What is the impact to the general fund or maybe like our bond ratings if we increase this debt limit?
Mr. Williams or Templin or Ms. Templin?
or is that one we're going to have to get back to? Boy, that went real fast from Williams to Templin. Ms. Templin, on the hot seat.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I can speak only to the tax provisions and the bonding provisions. We do not have an analysis on the fiscal impact of that. A lot of times we see bonding debt limit changes in public finance bills, and we do get revenue estimates for that kind of change. But I can follow up with the committee on this specific piece if there is a fiscal impact.
Mr. Bagnoli.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lee, the Minnesota State Fair is similar to a city. It's not a city, it's a public corporation. It's one of two public corporations in the state. The other one is the airport. Like a city, though, which means a public corporation is an entity that the legislature has given some public powers to, but not all. So in the case of the State Fair, we have our own police department. We don't have a fire department. We don't have taxing authority. So we have things that are somewhat, we control our own streets. We have things that are somewhat like cities. We have the ability, like the city of St. Paul and like a county of Ramsey County, we have the ability to issue our own debt. But the state has put a cap on the debt that we are allowed to issue. This goes to the debt that the State Fair issues. It does not impact the state's geo bonding authority or the state's debt capacity or anything to do with the state, frankly.
Mr. Cole?
Mr. Chair, what Mr. Magnoli said is correct. The debt increase for the State Agricultural Society shouldn't impact the debt capacity of the state and is not tracked in Minnesota management and budget's debt capacity forecast.
Thank you, Mr. Cole. Representative Lee?
No, thank you, Mr. Cope, for saving us this time.
Okay. Yeah. Any other questions from members on the House File 16-1? Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Chair Davids. So I guess I'm just wondering, like, did this bill go to bonding? Should it go to bonding if there's an increase in the, you know, bonding authority for this public corporation?
Mr. Bagnoli.
Madam Chair, obviously it's up to the bonding committee, but in the past when this provision was, there was a point in history where the State Fair did not have its own ability to issue debt. About 2021 or two, as many of the buildings that we're talking about here were built either before WPA times, built basically before 1940. And a lot of these buildings are frankly coming due in their useful life. That's why we're here. And so the idea was they could do it through a conduit financing provision, or they could be given their own debt authority, and the legislature saw fit to give their own debt authority, but they put a cap on it. And so that all went through the tax committee and didn't go through the bonding committee. In subsequent times, that number has gone from 10 or 15 to 30, and now we're asking it to go to 50. And so generally it's been included as part of the public finance article in the past because it has to do with the issuance of local debt.
Chair Gomez.
Yeah, so the Agricultural Society has been around since the 1800s, but it just got independent bonding authority in 2021 or 2022, you said?
That's correct.
Mr. Bagnoli.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
And this is the second, thank you, Mr. Chair, but this is the second time since then, which was 3 years ago, you're coming back for an increase in that limit.
Mr. Bagnoli.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, yes.
Chair Gomez.
That seems like quick to come back and ask for it to be tripled, like what, over 2.5, 3 years?
Mr. Bagnoli.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, I don't know if it was 3 years, but I'm sure you do. But I would say that I think that there was some regret then in the price of construction, as you've undoubtedly seen here from our jaw-dropping, and the buildings that we're involved in are not are not usual buildings. Most of these buildings, frankly, are historic, and they are enormously expensive. They are more expensive than you would, candidly, you would mostly think maybe we ought to demolish the building and rebuild a new building, but these are historic buildings and part of our state's cultural heritage, so there's a desire to continue them, but they're costing way more. If I could just add one more.
Yes, Mr. Bagnoli.
Question, so I don't want to. The only thing I would add further is that the amount that we're asking for is sustainable within the state fair's operating budget. We're not pushing ourselves to a limit where we are unsustainable or would be in a position of precariousness. One of the reasons, unfortunately, that the ticket prices have gone up, and we really, the goal for the ticket prices is to keep them in a movie level, to keep them as low as possible. This is the great Minnesota get-together. It is meant to be for everybody. Unfortunately, right now in our state's history, in the fair's history, many of these buildings are coming, their useful lives are coming due. And so we have been very cognizant about keeping, being able to construct, but keeping within debt limit guidelines for the fair.
So. Chair Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you. I appreciate the just the explanation about the relationship between the sort of financial wherewithal of the State Agricultural Society and the increase in the bonding limit that you're seeking. I guess, so personally, I don't know a ton about bonding. I learn new things about bonding every few months, it feels like, around here, having never been on the bonding committee. But I didn't know what a public corporation was when I read through this, and so I appreciate you clarifying that. I don't know if there's, well, first of all, presumably, like, there's a reason that people put limits on things in statute, and can't really speak to that. But I also don't know if there's any, given that we're granting authority to this entity that I don't really know very much about called a public corporation, I don't know if there's any added risk, like, for the state, given that it's a public corporation. I'm going to go talk to the bonding people about this, I guess, just because it's not my area exactly. And I'm curious about if there was a limit put in place, why was it put in place? And if we're, you know, going through it a couple times here, then I'm just curious about if there are any implications or externalities to this decision that I just don't know about because I'm not super familiar with bonding. Right. So that'll be kind of a follow-up piece. The other thing that I just wanted to note when I was looking at the revenue estimate, under revenue analysis detail, the second point, a growth rate of 14% is assumed from records from the State Agricultural Society. And so you'll see that each year the cost of this goes up by 14%. And Representative Lee said yesterday that we know Chair Davids doesn't like inflators, but he's cool with them as long as they're on stuff he likes. But that's quite an inflator, like 14% year over year over year
Madam
over
Chair,
year.
That's
yes.
A good inflator.
That's so. This is called a good inflator. But this is a big old good inflator, Mr. Chair. So I know it's not an inflator as such, but that this is. But just want to say this is the kind of it's uncapped, right? And so that means, as the cost of it goes up 14% a year, which is more than the rate of growth than a lot of, you know, additions to the general fund than maybe most any addition to the general fund, just that, you know, every choice that we make to erode the sales tax base has implications for the general fund. This is a relatively small note, but, you know, but something is something. A dollar is a dollar. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
And thank you, Madam Chair. A couple things, and staff, nonpartisan, please correct me if I'm wrong. I do not believe the bonding in my bill has anything to do with state bonding or affects it anyway, does it? I don't think it does. Mr. Cope? Mr. Cope?
Mr. Chair, generally the only way that the debt of an entity distinct from the state would impact the state's debt capacity is if the state either had a moral obligation to support the debt because there was a reporting obligation for the entity, and there's none in the legislation for the Agriculture Society, and the only other situation would be if there are appropriation-backed debts, like appropriation bonds, and that's not the case with the State Agricultural Society Bonding Authority.
Okay, thank you. And I'll wrap it up here. Two other things. Some have asked, well, why are you the author on this? I've been the author on the state fair bills for many, many years, and it goes way back to former Chair Hausman, because you normally go to the district, but this is a statewide entity, if you will, and basically since the Hausman days when she kind of turned it over to me, I've been doing it. We did contact Representative Finke, who actually represents the area, and she, as far as I know, was cool with it. Yes. Mr. Magnoli?
Mr. Chair.
I don't see many toes here.
Madam Chair, she was comfortable with you carrying the bill. I don't know if cool with the, she was comfortable with comfortable. You carrying the bill. I don't want to carry it.
You and all your legal terms.
I don't want to characterize her. We talked about the bill, but I don't want to. She was comfortable with where we were at. I'll just leave it.
And I want one other thing, Mr. Bagnoli and Mr. Leach. I do have a request for the State Agricultural Society. I love the grandstand, and I'd really like it if you could book Jefferson Starship. I was listening to the song Jane, and Representative Freiberg has an uncle that is in the band, correct? Representative Freiberg?
Yes, this is actually my biological uncle, my dad's brother. If you look up David Freiberg, he's got a lengthy Wikipedia page. Long musical history. He was with Jefferson Starship in the 1970s and left when they left kind of during their We Built the City days, and then came back, and now they're kind of doing the, you know, the casino type circuit. So I think the grandstand and at the state fair would be perfect.
Chair Freiberg, that's quite lucrative, the circuit there. But what's the difference between Jefferson Starship, the one I love, and was there a Jefferson Airplane, or was there just Starship, or just Jefferson Airplane?
How much time do we have left in committee, Mr. Chair?
Well, the Robbins bill won't take long.
Mr. Chair.
But it's Jefferson Starship was the original band.
Jefferson Airplane was the band in the 60s when they did White Rabbit, Volunteers. Then they became Jefferson Starship in the 1970s. Their big hits were Jane and Miracles. My uncle coincidentally wrote Jane. And then they became Starship in the 80s. Some say that was their more commercial period when they did songs such as We Built This City. Sarah, what's the one that was in the movie Mannequin? Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now. And then they reformed around the mid-2000s as Jefferson Starship when my uncle rejoined the band. And so they've been kind of touring in that form since then.
That's so cool. Chair Gomez.
Mr. Chair, I think the difference between Jefferson Airplane and Jefferson Starship is LSD. Thank
you. Whoa! Chair, could I talk about psychedelics for a moment?
If you look up my uncle's arrest record, I think that can be confirmed.
Representative Freiberg, you still have the floor, if you want.
I think I've expounded enough upon the Jefferson Starship era. But I'm happy to talk more if you'd like me to, Mr.
Well, they're in my head. I had a doctor appointment down in Stewartville, and I had an insurance appointment at 7:30 in Dodge Center. So I listened to him the whole trip last night. So Jane is probably the best one, I'd say. Mr. Bagnoli, if you could work on that. Or Mr. Leach, get him booked if you could.
Mr. Chair, representatives, I will get on that right away.
I think if he can book them, I think I should pay to have the committee go. We'll work on it.
Mr. Lee.
Off the record. Off the record. Oh, I can't. No, I can buy anything I want for members. It's just Bagnoli can't buy anything for me is what the issue is. Okay. I want to stay at this side of the bars, the iron bars. Okay. With that being said, we'll just wrap it up. I'll renew my motion that House File 1681
be later for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. And I think what we're going to do, members, is I've got a whole bunch of Sweet Martha's cookies back here, but we should wrap up our work first. So, Representative Robbins and members, you should have put in your files, your save files, House File 2197. And we had a lengthy debate on it, but I would like to lay this over for possible inclusion. If we have any other member questions, or Chair Gomez, you'd like to wrap it up. And then it's cookies. Chair Gomez. So I will, Chair Robbins moves House File 2197. I do not believe there is an amendment. Okay, so we now have the vote for us. Some comments, Chair Robbins, and then we'll go to member questions. Unless the department wants to say something. I mean, if the department wants to say something, you're in. Okay. You're okay? Okay. Chair Robbins, do your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm happy to be back and present this bill. I know when we last broke off, Chair Gomez had the floor. And so if we wanted to just pick up there, and I'm happy to take more questions, and then I have closing comments. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, any member questions? Otherwise, Chair, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair. This might be a little bit non-traditional, but I think it's important for me to bring something up because it was just an interesting experience I had yesterday with my 20-year-old daughter. And I think on this committee, we don't have a lot of 20-year-olds that come forward to really talk about these issues. So, and I get that I'm new here, so if I can indulge, I would appreciate that. So I've been teasing with Chair Gomez that my days have been like starting and ending with taxes because my daughter's been asking me more questions about it as she's learning how to do her own taxes. And yesterday, or she worked last night, she works overnights, and she came home and as I was leaving for work and she was coming home from work, and we crossed paths and she said, Mom, I got to talk to you about something. There's this bill I heard my friends talking about that is going to make me have to pay more money because I don't have kids. And that was the way it was translated to her. I don't know where she heard it or where they heard it or where it came from. But I thought, for sure she's going to bring up some federal bill, right? Like something that's getting big headlines, something like that. And I said, well, what are you talking about? Tell me more. And she says, it was in the Minnesota House, and I'm going to have to pay more in state taxes because I don't have kids. And she demanded that I explain myself. And if you know how these kids are, I said, well, there was a bill that was up, but let me just show you the video. And I played the video back of the conversation we did have in the committee the other day. And she watched it, and I did not comment on it because I'm new here, so I don't have a lot of expertise to add to it except for my lived experience, and I didn't really want to, I wanted her to learn this on her own. And so she watched it, and at the end, she dropped her phone down, and she said, can I come testify? And I said, I think we're past that point because we're on like day two of this. But she said, well, can I write something? Will you read it? Will you tell this lady? Is how she said it, okay? And she says, she's really upset. And so on our way, my way out the door and her way coming in the door, she wrote down some things really quickly. And I just wanted to kind of run those by you just so that you know and hear from some of the folks who are in this income bracket that would be affected by this. And so she said, the people who make the amount of income that you're speaking about are high schoolers, single moms, new adults trying to get started in life, people on Social Security, college students, and the elderly. Why are we taking essential money from our neighbors who are struggling the most? She said, I heard you call people like me the low income, and this means that you can recognize that I'm making less than the average Minnesotan, but yet are asking for me to put out more money to the higher income families when I can barely even pay for myself. She said, I don't get any help from the state because I still live with my mom who helps support me, but this would mean that $400 from my hard-earned earnings would go to give other families and kids that money just because they have a two-parent household, which we do not. I already don't get much of a paycheck because it covers my taxes on my tips, and my tips are not guaranteed. So why would you come after people like me, and why not tax the rich since they can at least afford it? And she said, someone on the committee said that birth rates are declining, yet the future generation of your country is already struggling to make ends meet and struggling to even dream of ever having the privilege to afford to get married and start a family. I hope you make up your mind because it sounds like a privilege to have that mindset. So this is, I tried to, she had some more harsh words in here and I did kind of temper them down a little bit. But I wanted to put that out there because, you know, when we talk about the folks who are going to be most affected by this, you guys have heard my story and I've talked about it. I come from multiple generations of teen moms. My daughter has worked really hard to be responsible. She's saved $5,000 already this year, you know, working as hard as she can to not become a teen parent and to make good decisions and break literally hundreds of years of a cycle in my family. And this was really hard for her because that $400 to her is the difference of making it or not. It's what I'm making her pay to cover her insurance and her cell phone bills and things, you know, start getting her used to paying some of that stuff. And so I just want to put that on the record. So I appreciate taking a moment to say that. But a lot of times these kids don't have a chance to come in and testify. And I hope I can at least give some of them a voice here.
Thank you, Representative Hansen, to wrap it up. But Chair Gomez. Oh, what's that?
Oh, I'm fine. I can close. Yeah. It's fine.
No,
thank
we'll go
you.
To Chair Gomez, and then we'll go to Chair Robbins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, we had a good conversation about this the other day. The thing that I would say is that we share the goal of increasing the child tax credit for more families and for more middle income families. And the only reason that we didn't do it was because it's very, very expensive. But I just think the purported solution of you know, increasing taxes for 300,000 Minnesotans, we just kind of heard from one of them. You know, there are a lot of low income people who don't, it's not even that they don't have children. It's that they don't currently have dependents, somebody they can claim as a dependent. And the idea that we would, you know, make that kind of choice to increase taxes on 300,000 Minnesotans in order to deliver a tax benefit to 100,000 Minnesotans doesn't make sense to me. And, you know, I do just want to say that there is, it's not just in the Minnesota House, but it's across all levels of government that I personally have observed a lot of concern about how we're going to pay for government spending when it goes to poor people, and not a lot of concern about how we're going to pay for government spending, particularly when it goes to corporations. And this is especially true in the tax area. So I appreciate the conversation, and thank you, Representative Robbins, for this bill.
And thank you, Chair Gomez. Before we have the author wrap it up, Wednesdays, now you have the gavel Tuesday. It's my intention Wednesday to bring up House File 926, a Nash bill, and then we're going to be hearing the governor's bill and from Ms. Bears.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah,
okay. Okay. Well, you should support a David's bill. You really should. Okay, to wrap it up, before Sweet Martha's Cookies, Chair Robbins, I'm putting you between Sweet Martha's Cookies.
Well, I certainly do not want to test the patience of the committee, Mr. Chair, but I do appreciate the opportunity to share my thoughts based on the conversation at the last meeting and again today. And thank you, Representative Hansen, for sharing your daughter's thoughts as well. I also have daughters in their 20s, and they are also working hard and saving money and scrimping to afford their lives. And so I definitely understand that. And members, I think the big point I want to make is that Minnesota is an outlier in how significant the marriage penalty is in our state. And we have it in the standard deduction, we have it in the working family credit, and it's substantial. $5,960 is the marriage penalty currently in statute for the working family credit. And the working family credit was intended to help working families. And I know we did the carve out, so it also goes to people who do not have dependents. And I know the federal government also now does that as well. But the people who get that at the state level get many other benefits. So I was just going to run through a quick list of them. So it's not like if they lose this credit that would help so many middle-class families, they would still not have a safety net. Under current benefit, it looks like most of them qualify for SNAP, for medical assistance, for the free college, for the federal EITC, which is $600, and I'm sorry, there was a couple other things as well. And I really do care about helping the lowest income members of our communities, and we do that in a variety of ways. Already, the state is very generous. We have some of the most generous benefits in the country. And I think the safety net is incredibly important, and I'm not talking about taking that away. I am talking about how we can deliver on the promise that was made in the last biennium that we would deliver middle-class tax cuts. That was the exact phrase that was used. And that, members, did not happen, as I pointed out last time, from the tax expenditure study. Middle-class people starting at incomes of $66,000 and above are the ones who got tax increases, $11 billion in tax increases, many of which, members, are very regressive. So they not only were tax increases that affected the middle class, they fell disproportionately on the people in the lower deciles. So just to remind everyone, in 2023, we increased the state budget by 40%, 38%, and we did that by raising taxes on vehicle registration tab, sales tax, delivery fee, the gas tax tied to inflation, the new metro sales tax for housing and for transportation, and the payroll tax for the new paid leave program. So members, those taxes are a way that we are paying for the child tax credit that we passed. And what I'm trying to do is just reduce the marriage penalty. We listened to a bill last week about the marriage penalty, and everyone was very supportive of it, which is great because I think we all recognize the just high levels of research that talk about how kids and families and women are more successful in two-parent homes. Educational outcomes are better, economic outcomes are better, and so we should be trying to reduce the marriage penalty. So this bill is not perfect. It might not be the best way to do it, but members, when we have a $6 billion deficit that was created by all the reckless spending of the $18 billion surplus, we have to weigh, if we're going to deliver middle-class tax cuts that really matter to families, that will make life more affordable, then we have to be able to find a way to pay for that. And this is a modest proposal. And I just want to point out, there is ample studies from the National Bureau of Economic Research and others that have done studies on universal basic income, and this is not the same as universal basic income, but I think the analogy is appropriate, that when people who are single without dependents, that's a very narrow subset of the population who are low income, they do better when there isn't the additional transfers. And so just to quote here quickly from a study from the National Bureau of Economic Research that came out in July of 2024, the control group versus the people who got the transfer, there was a 3.9% decrease in labor market participation by the people who got the transfer, and they were worse off by $2,000 because of the decrease in labor market participation. So I know my kids, Representative Hansen's kids, they are all working really hard to make it and make life affordable. And I applaud them. They are doing all the right things, and we need to find ways to help them too. But for the working families, this is the working family credit in the middle class. They are the ones who are paying the steepest price because of this cutoff. And earlier, it was said that this is a single mom, hurting single moms. It is making single moms better. So under the current law, the cutoff for single moms is $31,000. Under my bill, it raises to 37,000. So we are increasing the benefit for single moms. And so I just wanted to make those points, members. I know we disagree on this, and I welcome the discussion of how we can do better for all Minnesotans to make life more affordable. But in this case, looking at the working family credit, I was just trying to eliminate the marriage penalty. So I thank you for your consideration. I think it's been a good discussion for the sake of the committee, and I look forward to continuing to work with all of you on these issues. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Representative Robbins. Representative Robbins renews her motion, House File 2197, be later for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Chair Gomez.
Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just quick next week preview. Tuesday, April 1st, we'll be doing TIF things. We'll be hearing some individual exemptions for cities, and we'll also be hearing some general law changes. On Thursday, April 3rd, we'll be hearing Representative Herr's fifth tier bill and some other revenue raisers. So thank you.
Okay, anything else for the good of the order? If not, good government all the time. We are adjourned.